Welcome to the Rise Network podcast show, a podcast dedicated to help you reach your dream lifestyle through investing in real estate. We're going to be sitting down with new, intermediate, and experienced investors to talk all about real estate and how it has changed their lives. If you're looking to scale your portfolio or even just get into real estate investing, you're in the right place. Make sure to tune in. Good morning, everyone. You are listening to the Rise Network podcast. Mayu, how are you this Sunday morning?
It's good. You know, great weather outside. Sunday morning, 9 a.m. Hopping on a Zoom call with Austin. Nothing better to do.
Yeah, you're not at a patio. You're not chilling, not at a cottage.
I did go to a patio one day, but it's just not the same. So no, but a couple cottages planned for later this month. I think that's really the only thing people can do for entertainment right now. Or one of the only things. How are you, man?
Good, man. I'm feeling like I'm getting much more connected with nature, which is really odd for me because I did not fish at all. I did not really go for hikes.
Oh, you went fishing?
I go fishing quite frequently now, man. It's a nice peace of mind, relaxation, get my head off of things.
Where do you go?
I go to a bunch of places. I go to Port Perry. I go to Dufferin Creek, Ajax, around the Durham region is typically where I go. Probably not the best fishing spots, but I'm just kind of starting off and I just use it as a relaxation kind of, and I can pop my cell phone out and deal with texts and emails while I'm fishing as well. But man, Like prior to this entire lockdown, dude, really my weekends would be spent like either out at a bar, a patio, or, you know, like doing unproductive stuff. So it's good that I've gotten more in touch with myself, if that makes sense. It's weird.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And it's made a lot of people look internally at Canada and Ontario as a whole. Like, hey, like, what can we do here rather than, oh, do we have to like go to New York City for a weekend to like party or whatever, right? Like, what can you do here that's kind of like a little bit more like nature-based and relaxing, right? So I think it's definitely driving a lot of changes in consumer behavior, which is going to be interesting for the travel industry as a whole. But I guess we'll wait and see what comes out of that.
Yeah, so we're going to be jumping into our first episode. And who is our guest, Mayu?
Yeah, that would be me.
It would be old McMayu. It's a joke you'll hear in the podcast. It sounds lame right now, but you'll see it as you listen through the episode. I was going to give an intro on you, but why don't you just boost yourself up and give a quick 10-second bio about yourself?
Yeah, man. So I am a real estate investor. I've got 18 properties that I built up over the last 5 years. I started off investing in the GTA, Precon, and other properties down here.
Stop. 10 seconds is up. I think that was a good bio. Let's jump straight into the podcast. If you guys are interested in hearing Mayu's story, 18 properties, that's amazing. Let's get right into it.
All right.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I'm here and I'm interviewing my co-host, Mayu.
Mayu, hello, everyone.
why don't we just jump straight into it? Before real estate investing, what were you doing and what kind of led you up to make that decision of, hey, I'm going to buy my first investment property?
I mean, so my family immigrated here back in the 90s. We lived in this apartment complex, basically called Tuxedo Court in Scarborough. I'm sure you know of it.
Oh, yeah.
There was interesting kind of impacts of that on my own like personality. I was always just like curious, like, oh, like who owns these massive buildings that were like they're not the best buildings, but I was always just really curious about like who owned them and how it worked, right? So growing up for me, real estate was always wealth. Like I imagined, you know, one day being able to drive around and say, I own this, I own that, etc.
I own Tuxedo Court.
That's ideal if I could get the numbers to work there. So that really impacted, I'd say, like my childhood and what my idea of wealth was. I was always fascinated in business. So I went to do my undergrad in business, but I specialized in accounting just because that's really the only thing I knew about business at that time. Yeah, became a CA, worked in one of the big four accounting firms. And really, like right after I graduated university, I bought my first property. And it wasn't that I knew I was going to be a real estate investor. It was more so I knew I had a spending habit. And I knew if I didn't tie up my money into real estate, that I would spend it. So my strategy was, why don't I commit myself to this pre-con condo, which requires like 15 grand every, like, I can't even remember, every whatever quarter or two quarters, right? So it ties up your monthly cash flow. So I made those payments, got my first property down. And then I was like, okay, that worked out pretty well. Let me try another one. And then it was kind of a snowball effect. And I'd say up until from 2015 to 2018, I really had no idea what I was doing. And then I got really educated in the real estate investing side. I'd always heard of bigger podkits, but there was no real like Canadian equivalent at that time. So I stumbled upon a couple Canadian like real estate content producers, which really changed the game for me. And, you know, like throughout, I've always been a big believer and a big fan of leveraging smart debt to invest. And that, you know, it's not really about timing the market. It's just more so about like how much time you spend in the market. And so with those kind of principles, I became just a real estate investor by default, I guess, to a point where now, like I'm more focused on cash flow, more focused on investing in the Windsor region rather than the GTA. And I'm a bear investor at this point.
That's awesome, man. So you mentioned a bit about your first investment in pre-construction. How old were you when you purchased that pre-construction? I know a common question we get from a lot of newer investors is how did you end up saving that money? And why did you go with the pre-construction route? Because I can tell you when I got into real estate, the only investment that stuck out in my head again was pre-construction. Of course, I like similar to you, I'm investing out in Windsor now. But what was it about pre-cons that made you attracted to it? And of course, touch on the area, give a bit more details on that.
Yeah. So like I said, I bought my first pre-con right out of university. I had a little bit of OSAP, not too much because I basically saved my money during my co-op terms, paid down for university and rent and so on. And then I didn't really have capital. I had line of credits, which, you know, it's not really capital, but you can tap into it to make payments. And this was the summer that I was on my CFE leave. So I was just basically driving around looking at real estate properties instead of studying. And then I was like, I was stuck in kind of an analysis paralysis mode at that point, right? Where I kept analyzing different like deals, different properties, different real estate, like opportunities, whatever. And it was really my parents that gave me the push. On their side, they just wanted me to stop wasting time looking at real estate. And they were like, look, why don't you just go buy something? And I was like, all right, fine. So one of the projects I was looking at that time was a Yonge and Eglinton pre-construction project. I've always been very big on, especially in the GTA, investing where the transportation hubs are, right? It shouldn't be a transportation hub that's already there, because if it's already there, then it's already priced in, right? So I saw the LRT project coming to fruition. I thought it would be by 2020, but clearly that's not done yet. And I saw the
opportunity. That's how it works.
And the LRT, the point of that was really to connect Mississauga all the way to Scarborough or some variation of that. So I liked that idea, and I liked that it was a new and upcoming route. Now, for sure, it was priced in a little bit because it's not like I was the first person that heard of the LRT project back then, but the fundamental was still there, and I saw a big lift in value coming once it was actually done. So I bought a pre-construction condo out of Yonge and Eglinton. I went the pre-construction route because I didn't have money available to buy something existing, which I would have loved to do at that time even, but ultimately it went up significantly in value, as did the rest of the GTA condos. Yeah, no regrets on that side.
Yeah, I love that. You kind of just made things work. You jumped in and you took action. For me, I kind of have my thoughts on pre-construction, both positive and not positive. And I know we talked about this a bit offline. One big thing about pre-cons is that you're tying your money in for a very long time. So it's hard to make other moves, especially if that's all the capital that you have. Look at kind of what we were able to accomplish, multiple properties in a short period of time. And if all of that money was tied in pre-constructions, I'm not sure how that would have been possible other than through private money.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not to bash on any one investment strategy. I think the pre-con strategy does work for a lot of people. And it worked for me at that time, right? Like I wasn't really a real estate, quote unquote, real estate investor. I was just this guy that was working a normal job that just wanted to buy some sort of real estate property that would be hands off, right? So the pre-con worked great on that side. And I know a lot of people that just have an abundance of capital and they don't want, like, for whatever reason, if they don't want to partner with other people. So they want something that's fully passive or hands off, right?
Yeah.
Condos, you're not going to have to worry about cutting the grass, shoveling the snow. And like a lot of the maintenance issues are kind of covered by the condo corp, right? And at the same time, pre-con, what's a con for you and I, meaning like it takes 5 years to finish, is a pro for a lot of people because they're like, oh, like I just have to give like 60 or whatever, the 60,000, and I don't have to worry about it for another 5 years. And then, you know, hopefully in 5 years, the value has gone up just you know, purely based on time, value of money, inflation, et cetera, logically should. And that works for a lot of people. But so that was a one and only pre-con project that I did. And it took nearly just over 5 years to finish. I didn't expect that. But today I'm more focused on, you know, what's the velocity of my money, right? Like how fast can I put money in, take it out and move on to the next one while keeping a secured asset, right? And ultimately, whether it's my money or my partner's money, that's really the big focus for a lot of the people that kind of invest in the burst strategy and cash flowing assets, right?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So you mentioned your first investment property. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you're up to 18 properties now. How did you get from point A to B? Like, tell me, what was that journey like? And how quick was that journey?
That journey was, okay, so that journey was 5 years. And it really should not have been 5 years. It's 2015, 2016, 2017. I didn't really do much on the real estate side. I picked up my first property 2015, paid that down. And then at the same time, my wife, at the time, my girlfriend, bought one as well. And then in 2017, once I'd finished my condo payments, I bought another property. And throughout this entire way, I'm just kind of juggling debt, using my employment income to try and pay down my debt. And so then I bought that second property in 2017. And then 2018, we sold off a property, like one of the earlier ones that my wife bought. And we stumbled upon a little bit of capital at that point.
So these were single families, these were duplexes. What area are we looking at?
Like single families at this point. So the first one, Yonge and Eglinton condo, second one, semi-detached in Ajax, did everything wrong with that one that you could possibly think of.
Oh, I know.
third one was actually a good learning lesson as well. That one was out in Clarington, Ontario, which is just past Oshawa. Once again, made a lot of mistakes on that one. So I made a lot of mistakes early on and I wasn't fully sold that you could just do real estate investing. I wasn't sold at this point because I'd made all these mistakes. But they were all like very good learning lessons, right? So then that takes us to 2018. And at this point, I had become a little bit more kind of frustrated with the employment income side of things. I realized that, you know, just climbing the corporate ladder, there's two things. One, there's a cap on how much you can truly make, how much the average person can truly make, right? Not everyone's the CEO of some company earning whatever millions of dollars, right? So that was one thing. And the second thing that I realized is I was talking to a lot more people that were older than me. And I was noticing a trend where my dad's an accountant as well. So I was noticing a trend where around 50 years old or so, a lot of people were deciding to become self-employed. And I was like, well, like, what's going on there? And a lot of it, once you kind of talk to them and you dig into their backstory, it's, you know, like I was let go of by my company that I had worked for 20 years or so. And then they struggled to get another job. So I was very aware that that was a big risk, right? Even you or I, we're young right now. So even if we get laid off for whatever reason, we can go and find another job. But what happens if that happens when we're 50 years old, right? So I'd become a little bit more concerned with these things and aware that, you know, it is a risk. I stumbled upon the FIRE movement, which I was impressed by, but I thought frugality was what the FIRE movement is based on.
And what's the FIRE movement?
Financial independence and retiring early, right? So a lot of the hardcore FIRE people, it all comes down to frugality, right? But there is a way to get to FIRE without necessarily it being lean FIRE, which is a frugality side of it, right? As long as you're not giving into lifestyle erosion and or what's it called? Lifestyle
creep? Inflation.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So as long as you're not giving into that and you kind of keep your costs fixed at a point in time, as long as your top line keeps increasing, you should still be able to reach that FIRE level at some point in time, right? So I stumbled upon this in 2018. And then, like I said, I had a little bit of capital saved up at this point. So I did my first quote unquote burst strategy approach in the GTA. So this was a Scarborough bungalow that I made into a 2-unit house. And, you know, then at that point, I kind of realized, shit, the cash flow is freaking awesome on this. I was hooked. Right, it just takes one property to like really hook you, but I had left a significant amount of capital on that property, so it wasn't a full burr as you can kind of expect in Toronto. But it still gave me a decent amount of capital back, and then I had stumbled upon the merit in the Windsor area, the potential to do full or near full burrs, and the strong cash flowing houses. Right, like even if you're doing a single family house, it would cash flow very strongly out there. So then I had started doing Windsor at that point, and since then my property has grown pretty much exponentially with Windsor properties. I've picked up another GTA property along the way, and that was more so for me and my wife to eventually live in. But yeah, so that's where I'm at today, and that's kind of the route that I took. Everyone takes a different route. I think had I learned and focused on the burst strategy and the velocity of money early on, the trajectory would have been way different.
Yeah, so you were mentioning that you were picking up properties pretty frequently. Was that just through saving money, or did you have to sell properties to acquire the next property? Or was it that, were you refinancing? Like, what were you doing to buy the next property? Because you kind of jumped from 1 to 18. So the first couple, you saved enough money, bought it, right? But what helped you really, really scale up?
Yeah. So the first property, you're right, it was savings. And the only, like, I wasn't earning a lot. It wasn't like I was earning like 200K so I could save enough money. It was really just like the normal scenario where people that work, so I worked in the Big Four at an accounting firm, and a lot of people live downtown. I was just being really cheap, and I was like, I don't need to live downtown. So that saved me automatically close to $1,500 to, you could argue, close to $2,000 a month. And I basically just took that money, and I paid down my line of credit that I used to buy that first pre-construction condo. And then I had some, like, I did some other things on the side, which got me a little bit of money, et cetera. And I basically, like, aggressively put all that money down towards the condo. And then throughout this time, I was, you know, still saving and investing a little bit in the stock market, et cetera. But the second property that I bought was fully levered again. So once again, line of credit. And my wife's property that she bought at the same time was kind of a very similar story. And then eventually, though, to scale and to get into that high level of capital, I looked at things from an ROE perspective, like, how much equity do I have tied up in one property? And what's the return that it's getting me? And I realized that property out in Clarington, the return on equity was terrible because there was maybe like 200 to 300K of equity in there, and I was getting like $1,800 a month in rental income, and it was like just break-even cash flow, so I wasn't really meeting that criteria. And it was a really nice house because we bought a pre-con. The tenant had kind of destroyed it when they moved out, a lot of frustration, etc. So I sold that one, and ultimately it was a lot of that capital that allowed us to kind of redeploy into like all these different properties. And then from there, the strategy evolved a little bit. I tapped into kind of now a HELOC on my condos. I'm going to be tapping into that one. I'd gotten a little bit more money along the way just from saving from my job. And I was able to kind of redeploy that on an ongoing basis. So at this point, like, the way we've structured our finances, we basically live off my wife's income, and my capital is just, well, my money pays for the car, and then the rest of it just goes towards real estate.
Gotcha. Totally. Makes sense. Something I'm curious about is that you made quite a bit of mistakes at the beginning.
Right? Yeah. So,
That's it. No question.
Yeah, statement. No question.
No, I'm joking. Yeah, no, the question is what is the biggest mistake you made as a first time or newer investor when starting off?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, man. I honestly don't think it's just one thing, right? Like, we already talked about the return on the velocity of money. So not focusing on that was definitely one big mistake. But I made the most mistakes, the most like dollar value mistakes on the tenanting side, right? So that first property that we bought, we rented out to the first person that came along, like quite literally, because I was like, I just posted an ad on Kijiji one day, and it was out in Clarington. So I'm like, man, who the heck rents out in Clarington? Like, I have no freaking idea what we're going to do here. And the first person that came along, I was like, yes, like, if you're willing to pay me the money that I need, like, yeah, take it. What can really go wrong here? And then, of course, like, there's, like, life takes interesting turns. So she was good for a year, very nice person. But ultimately, she got divorced, and she had 4 kids to kind of support, right? So we ended up losing almost like $10,000 or $12,000 in rents on that property. And then when Holy she moved crap. Out, and yeah, and then when she moved out, I had to spend like maybe $5,000 or so to like get that property back to like a saleable condition. And then we ended up selling it because I was like, this is just a nightmare property. And then the second time around, you'd think you'd get it better. But I rented out my Ajax property at that point, and very similar story. The guy was actually not a similar story. He was self-employed, so his business was doing good. He was able to kind of support that, show me kind of like bank statements and things like that. And he was solid for a year. And then after a year, his business kind of tanked. It was a flea market business. So arguably the better the economy does, the less people are likely to kind of shop at the flea market, right? So his business slowly started to get worse and worse and worse. And I was just way too nice of a landlord. I gave him too many kind of freebies. I let him pay rent late. I didn't really give him too much of a hassle because ultimately he was still paying. By the end of it, I had lost somewhere in the ballpark of like close to $20,000 on that property.
You love to lose money, don't you?
Yeah, man.
No, I'm joking.
but this was like, you know, $20,000 in lost rental income. And he left that place so trashed. I couldn't believe it because he really was a nice guy at a point in time. And I think, I don't know what happened to him. And like along the way, things just kind of messed up for him and life took its turn, right? At this point, logically, anyone should stop investing in real estate. They go, fuck, like, what is this? Like, I'm losing money left, right, and center. I'm hemorrhaging money. And luckily, I was still living at home, so I could continue to cover the carrying costs, and I had a fair bit saved up at that point. But then you live and you learn, right? So the tenant risk is definitely a key focus area now for me when I invest. It's a reason I don't buy in, shittier parts of town where you can't attract a good quality tenant. Or if you do invest in those areas, make them student rentals or discount the rent enough that you can attract a good quality tenant. It's definitely kind of shaped me and who I am. Focusing on tenant risk, I think, is very important when you've got one or two properties and you don't have cash flow from other assets to kind of cover any losses. But yeah, those would be kind of the two learning lessons: focus on velocity of money and focus on tenant risk.
Yeah, I think that's key. I think your mindset, believe it or not, got you through those tough times, because any logical person would have said, I'm done with real estate. I lost money on my first two or three investments, and you were almost fully leveraged up at that point. Leverage up just means taking out debt, guys.
Yeah.
So Mayu, you were fully leveraged. You were living life on the edge. You were taking that risk and you still pulled through it.
To make matters worse, made sense. I was getting married that year, the year that I lost 20K in rental income, and Sri Lankan weddings are not cheap by any means. So add that on top of the level of stress, and I was doing a burr on a property at that point. So the amount of capital that was just flowing in and out of my bank accounts, I was like, shit, like, I have no idea what's going on at this point. You're right. Any logical person should have stopped. For me, like I said, from my childhood, like very early on, I'd kind of developed this idea that like real estate is wealth. So I was already a very firm believer, and I was kind of like continuing to educate myself along the way. And I knew exactly where I messed up, right? Like when that guy stopped paying rent, I knew what had kind of impacted his business, what I should have looked for early on. Like, he didn't have a very strong credit report, right? And that was just me being careless, not careless. Like, I knew he had a poor credit report, but I was okay with it. I'd kind of like justified it to myself. Right. So you live and you learn. I think any real estate investor that tells you that they didn't make a mistake early on or at some point in the career isn't giving you the full story. Right.
Yeah. It's all about accountability. You know what? What kept you going was also you took accountability. Again, it's that mindset. You knew that the asset class didn't fail you. You failed yourself. You failed the asset class. Yeah. You had high investor risk at that time.
Yeah,
because of the knowledge gap, right? And taking chances and not doing enough due diligence. It had nothing to do with the asset class. But once you did sharpen up that tool set of being a better investor, look at you now, 18 properties, renovating, refinancing, scaling. And all it took was not the asset class, but for you to mitigate the investor risk, mitigate the risk that you upon yourself put on the real estate asset.
Yeah, that's so true, right? Like, getting educated significantly changed things for me, and it kind of changed how I looked at real estate assets, and the type of real estate assets that I wanted at that point started to significantly change. Like, I moved away from Toronto assets where you get price appreciation, and I focused more on cash flow, because I saw the impact of, like, when I had just Toronto assets and the GTA assets and not much cash flow, like any... the air conditioning's out. Okay, how much is the brand new air conditioning? $1,500. Like, that's a lot of money, right? So when you don't have those cash flows, every single hit kind of impacts you. I learned kind of the importance of budgeting in that maintenance and capex. And I was also getting pretty tired of property management at this point, right? When you deal with enough tenant issues, you start to get really tired of it. So you budget that in as well, and you look for like other strategies that work. And there's a strategy that works for everyone, right? It might not be the same for everyone, but there is something in the real estate realm that should work for you, whether you want to be fully passive, fully active, like whatever the approach is.
Exactly. What would you say are some of the biggest myths or limiting beliefs that you heard or you personally believed while you were starting off investing, or maybe even now during your journey? And what would you suggest the viewers, or what did you do personally to overcome these limiting beliefs?
The first, I'd say... It's also a little bit of a cultural norm, buying your backyard, right? So like my parents, being immigrants, I don't even think they knew where Windsor was when I started investing in Windsor, right? So they were always like very early on, like, yeah, just like pick up a house in Toronto. And they weren't real estate investors by any means, and they're not entrepreneurs. My dad back home was a little bit more of an entrepreneur, but since coming here, he was an entrepreneur. So they just saw it as, yeah, sure, buy a real estate investment so that you're kind of getting today's price. And at whatever point you can move into it, right? They didn't understand kind of the long-term trajectory and potential for it. So they were very focused on buying Toronto. Forget about cash flow. Don't worry about anything. Just buy what you can afford and save up money so that you can buy that next property, right? And, you know, that those are two limiting beliefs, that the fact that, you know, people don't really like to use debt and pay interest on things. But ultimately, you know, debt is a vehicle to get you to a faster rate of growth than you would normally get by just saving your money, right? For sure, for me, it was buying in your backyard and being scared of debt. I got over the fear of debt very early on because I had no other option. I got over kind of that hurdle of investing in your backyard, kind of from my lessons that I learned investing in my backyard.
Gotcha. And important question, maybe we should have touched on this a bit earlier, but why real estate investing in general? What do you hope to get out of real estate investing?
Yeah, so aside from the wealth side of things, which is, you know, my perception of wealth is real estate, a big part of it for me, and we've kind of dabbled on this a little bit over this talk now, is kind of financial independence. Having that job security, there's been a big notion over the past whatever years that, you know, staying employed is less risk than being self-employed, right? But I think, you know, if COVID has taught everyone anything, it's there's no such thing as job security in today's market, right? When things are great. And if things hit the fan, then, you know, you're probably very easily disposable, right? So real estate investing for me was a big way to get to kind of financial independence and retiring early. Ultimately, I am a little bit more entrepreneurial in the sense that, like, I don't really like working my employment job. So it's kind of freeing up my time in the future to do whatever it is I really want to do. And I have this conversation with quite a few people where they're, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you spent like 10 years trying to become an accountant and then you become an accountant. And why do you want to just leave your CA designation? And to me, it's, you know, I've got another 30 years. So it seems kind of foolish to look at the 10 years that I've sunk as a sunk cost and to dedicate another 30 years to doing that exact same thing. Like, that doesn't make sense to me, right? So real estate to me is, it's a lot about freedom, a lot about giving you the ability to do what you want to do when you want to do it. And, you know, we'll see what that looks like. Another part of it is, you know, obviously no one really wants to commute. So the idea of being able to live where you want, when you want. I'm a farm guy, to be honest. Like, I would love the idea of living in a farm and not having to worry about anything, right? Just that, like, openness. So, like, you can't really do that when you're working a corporate job in the middle of downtown Toronto. There's only so far I could go and live, right? So getting that freedom.
That's awesome. Farm guy, eh? old McMayu, not old McDonald. Yeah.
My wife's a city girl, so I don't know how well it'll work out. But
yeah, I'd imagine there'd be some tension there.
And but, we live in the city, so clearly it's not working out too well for me.
yeah. So you dropped a lot of golden nuggets throughout this podcast so far. I'm gonna ask you another question about some advice you can give to newer investors. So for those people that are looking to jump into real estate investing, or maybe those people who are even experienced and intermediate in real estate investing, what would one tip be for these people that you've learned in your real estate journey so far? So you mentioned tenant quality, so let's not touch on that. Is there anything else that you can share?
You know, for someone that's just looking to get started, I said this earlier on as well, I think, but I'm a big believer that it's really not about timing the market, right? Like, forget COVID, forget whatever is going on in the real estate market today. I'm a strong believer that it's time in the market, and real estate is a very forgiving asset, right? Like, look at how many mistakes I've made, and my prices have, you know, like, sure, like, your prices go up and it kind of makes up for those mistakes that you can make, right? So I'm a very strong believer about, you know, spending more time in the market, which means the faster you can get into the market, make that leap of faith, sure, get educated. But if you have the capital and you feel like you don't have the education, to partner with someone that does have that education, right? And it's something I've preached to a lot of my friends. You know, just go buy something. Just like, don't worry too much about it. Don't overthink it. You know, like, I'll help you guys with the numbers, whatever, and then just make that leap of faith, right? And so that's really what I would advise to kind of beginning investors, people that are sitting on the sidelines debating, you know, when and how to get started in real estate. If you're an intermediate investor, meaning you've maybe got like 2 to 3 properties. I was having this call with someone else actually recently that had 2 properties, both of which weren't necessarily the best assets, right? And they had another property with significant equity built up, but it was a condo and they didn't want to assign it, et cetera. So if you're at that intermediary stage, I think it's important to look at your portfolio, right? Like, when you bought that first property, your goals and what you wanted is likely not the same as once you've closed that third property, right? So kind of look at your three properties, look at the amount of equity that's in them, and think about how can you, is this the best utilization of your money, right? And then like how can you redeploy that capital faster if you were to dispose of one or two of them? And then I think it's important to just constantly be, you know, reshuffling the deck, right? Like we've bought single family houses, but in 5 years, if we're doing apartment buildings as an example, does it really make sense to hold on to those single family houses? The reality is like probably not, right? You're more likely to kind of dispose of them and redeploy that capital into something else that works better for you at that point in time. Education is key. Mentorship is key, and surrounding yourself with people that are like-minded is definitely going to completely change your game for you.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, that definitely is advice that anyone can take away regardless of experience level, because I find that even myself, sometimes you get to the point where you're comfortable and you're not always surrounding yourself with the people that you should. You're not always going to networking events anymore because you feel like you've gotten the most out of them, but you can't get adjusted to that mindset, because what's gotten me here in the first place was through networking, was through buying real estate and holding it, not just flipping it for a quick buck, right? That's what got me my wealth so far. But it's easy to just look for, to want to get quick money, or when you have some success, to want to just spend some time with yourself and totally cut out networking. But you need to keep both going if you want to continue to grow and scale.
I think you're right on with that, right? Like I was going at real estate investing basically alone for a very long time. Like a lot of my friends weren't investing in real estate. I didn't really have like family members that were in it. I was just going at it alone, and which is why I made the amount of mistakes that I made, right? 2018 when it is really when I got exposed to the real estate investing ecosystem that exists in, you know, Ontario as a whole. And that, you know, allowed me to kind of talk to people that were doing like-minded things. And I remember that first event that I went to, I had three properties, and I met someone that had six properties, and I was kind of like, oh shit, like, I guess that is possible. Like, why can't I do that? Right. And then I literally just picked his brain about how he did it. And then I went and kind of did the same thing. Right. And then I met people that had 10 properties, and I was like, shit, why can't I do that? Like, well, how do I get to that stage? Right. And then eventually you hit a lot of barriers along the way, and having those people in your network so that you can reach out to them and go, yo, this happened. Like, what do I do? That's ultimately what's going to save you and allow you to keep growing your real estate portfolio.
Exactly. So now we're going to move part to the segment where I ask you three questions. Since this is the first podcast, I guess this is new for the viewers as well. We're going to be asking these three questions to each one of our guests. They're not necessarily real estate related, but I'd imagine since these are real estate investors, we're going to find a fair share will answer with real estate on the top of their mind. But let's try to keep these answers short and sweet, maybe a minute max on them. Are you ready, Mayu?
Yeah, we're going to have to come up with a name for this, but
yeah, we'll for the first one, we'll just call it the common three questions that we ask every guest. First question, if you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with that money?
Like I said earlier, I'm not one to give into kind of lifestyle creep or lifestyle erosion, whatever that thing's called. So ultimately for me, I've lived the same as when I was kind of at 60 to 70K a year in annual income. So let's say I left that to 100K, I'd probably, you know, deplete about 100K in capital per year, right? So the first goal for me, and we're all investors, so I would want to redeploy that into something that will get me at the bare minimum 100K a year, which is like 1% a year or something like that.
Yeah, you can private loan that money out.
Yeah, that's basically what I do, right? Like I'd look at the 10 million and I'd go, okay, like what percentage of that am I going to put in stocks? Maybe like 20% because I'm not a fan of the stock market. I'd probably, you know, put about 30 to 40% of that in private loans, gets me about 12% per year, which would be pretty solid. If that's on like 4 million or so, then that's, I don't know, my math is terrible, maybe like 300,000 to 400,000 in return every single year, which is pretty solid for me. And I'd use that to kind of, you know, travel a little bit, live life. But ultimately I'm not one to just sit around. So I'd have to find something that would keep me preoccupied, right? I think we're all kind of the same in the sense that retirement sounds great, but then what, right? Like, what am I going to do when I'm retired and just sitting at home? Like I'm going to be bored out of my mind. So I'd find a business to kind of run on the side as well. And then real estate would be like the other 50%, right? Like I love real estate. I don't just do it for the money.
You wouldn't go to Louis Vuitton and just buy the store out? That's a boring answer.
I think I'd probably have to. I don't think my wife would be okay with me getting $10 million and not buying her anything. So I'd have to go buy something.
Fair enough. So our second question is, if you can have dinner with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Yeah, that's a solid question, man. Dead or alive, I'm pretty big on history, but I don't know if I'd want to have a dinner with someone that's dead. So I'm going to say Gary V. Ultimately, like, whenever I'm kind of, I reach certain like hurdles where like shit hits a fan. And Gary V's channel is honestly like, it's very inspirational to me. He helps a lot of like new entrepreneurs, answers a lot of new entrepreneurs' questions. So I think having that ability to have that one-on-one and pick his brain would be absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah, I think Gary V is a lot of people, your favorite entrepreneur, that's his favorite entrepreneur. His or her favorite entrepreneur is Gary V. So whoever your favorite entrepreneur is, I bet you their favorite entrepreneur is Gary V. Because that guy, he is just ultra motivating, man. When I pop on a video of his, I just want to grind. I just want to hustle hard, you know?
Yeah, and it's also his story, right? Like, he's basically completely self-made. He went through an interesting route in life, like immigrant family. There's a lot of like inspiration behind his story, and it's very practical, the things he says, right? And it's kind of like, and he's also really big on the social media side, which is something like I'm going a little bit more into, but how he has grown his social media personality as well would be like absolutely amazing.
So we're going to jump right into the last question. Where are we going to see Mayu 5 years from now?
And you might not see me at all.
You're gonna be at Cuba?
No, so 5 years from now, it kind of goes back to what I was saying. Right now we're doing a lot of single families, duplexes, triplexes, etc. The goal is, whether it's later this year, early next year, to scale into kind of those mid-level multis. And then, you know, the eventual goal 5 years from now, I can see myself focusing on 20 plus units, that sweet spot between 20 to 50 units, and really scaling out the real estate portfolio there. Because ultimately, like I said, real estate for me is, I'd say about like 90%, I'm just really interested in real estate. Oh, old house that can be perfectly renovated and lifted in value. Oh, awesome, right? Like that shit excites me. So I'm definitely going to be in the same space of things. Will I still be employed at that point? I highly doubt it. I'm already kind of reaching a point where it doesn't logically make sense to stay employed for too much longer. So yeah, that's where I'd be in 5 years, I think.
I wanted to hear you say in 5 years I'm gonna own Tuxedo Court, but you know what, whatever you get.
Man, if Tuxedo Court came up at a good valuation, I would definitely go out and buy that.
We'd put in an offer, VTB.
I would.
Anyways, Mayu, it was a fun first podcast. Thank you for being on. You're going to be on in every single other podcast as well. So it's not like it's going to be our last time chatting or anything like that. I appreciate the golden nuggets that you dropped throughout. Guys, if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to subscribe to the Rise Network podcast. We're going to have all of the links down below. I'm pretty sure it'll be on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all of the other platforms. And if it's not, eventually it'll be on. So share this with your friends and families if you enjoyed it, and stay tuned until next time. Remember, guys, invest smarter and live better.